rethinking, retraining ourselves, rechanging the way that we view the world, that we view each other as men and women, I think is a very important part. So I have put some words that I just picked as big words from what you're saying. I want to underline education. And here, I think from my work, what I notice that education is a very large term. It does not necessarily mean going to school and learning how to write, although that is part of it. Because there are many, many groups of women that I work with in the two-thirds of the world who do not have literacy as part of their as part of their education. Simply, they have not gone to school to read and write. But they have been through an education that forms them as persons. They know who they are as persons created in the image of God. And they are able to stand up for their right because they have affirmed that inner self, either through the scriptures. I personally now, where I am in my thinking, have found that among the Christian community, theological education, affirmation of reading the scriptures in a way that affirms men and women as created in the image of God has really meant a lot of difference to women wherever they are. And women who have claimed this, men who have realized that this is important, so to also claim and spread, proclaim, that really has made the difference. So I usually in my job, one of the advocacy aspects that I do, because I work specifically for churches, is to really work hard on the education of women theologically and the education of women as a formation. We say often back at home in Africa is that it's very easy to tell people to say that they have no food because the people will really say, yes, we have no food, and after you will hear us from wherever you are and you will send some yellow maize to us. I say yellow maize because yellow maize in Africa is associated with aid, with food aid. Corn, yellow corn, because the original corn that we grow is white corn. So when people see yellow corn in the market, they say it's from somewhere, it's aid, because we don't grow it. But when you teach people to ask, why are we hungry? Are we hungry because we have cut all the trees and then the environment can no longer support the natural things that need to happen for us to have enough rain, so we have drought? If you teach people to ask, are we hungry because our political systems have mismanaged what we have, then you cause unrest. And what I mean by education is education that teaches people to ask questions. In the Western, when I have come encounter with them, in the beginning of my work in 1988, I had much more encounter with Europe than I had with North America that time. And every place that I went to in Europe, I would get questions like, tell us the needs of the women in Africa. I was supposed to do a global job, but it was difficult for the people to see me as bringing in the needs of the global women from elsewhere. And then I would say, actually, the African women sent me to ask you, what are your needs? What can they do for you? And that always put the people a little bit down. How can the African women ask to do anything for us? And I think what we were trying to do as we had that discussion together with many women in Europe, both Western and Eastern Europe, and the war was still on, and Eastern Europe was even much more, because Eastern European women used to feel that they were in need, but when it came to other continents, Africa or Asia, then they felt very much in control, but to focus less, in very good will. And I think what we were doing together is to have an education of each other that tries to say, there's mutuality in this. There's mutuality in this. What are the issues for you to focus where you are so that you can bloom where you are, and in so blooming, that blooming influence the others. So, for example, many European women were working at that time, still working at that time on the issue of apartheid, but race relations within their own countries also. because they felt that if they addressed that, they would understand it better and then address the question of South Africa. And usually I say to men and women who are from the North when I bring up the issues of women is that it's very easy to shift this debate to the South. Because people usually say it must be the South and women who are in problem because they carry water on their head and they have this little hole you saw in the video to dig, to plant. If only they had a combined harvester, all their problems would be gone. And then what I'm saying is that these issues don't go that way. It's not just by placing a new thing into a situation that changes. Otherwise, then we would be having an image of the perfect freedom from our sisters and brothers in the North, where those things are. Because we are dealing with issues which are beyond what we get in just providing the material that is needed. So the question is always back to, what would I do within the context of my own society that changes the thinking of the people there so that that thing can go in a circular way that others may also change because we have changed. Not because we have preached the gospel to them only, but because we are living out that particular thing that we are living. So education is important, and education for formation. Then I put the policies and laws. I think too that is very important, the policies and laws many countries, positive and policies and laws that promote the welfare of both men and women. Well, there are many laws that are very discriminative to women globally. Let me give you one example. Until 1994, there wasn't a law, an international law, that saw rape of women as a crime. Mm-hmm. In the war situation until 1994, as recent as 1994. And this law has been brought as an international law only after the outcry of the rape of women in the Bosnian case. And you know, there have been the rape of women in wars for many, many years, mm-hmm. for many, many years. But it was not seen as a crime, as one of the issues that are to be dealt with the international criminal law. And why is that? Why is it that it was not seen as a crime? Does anybody want to speak to that? That it did not exist in international law?
Well, this goes with war. First, we turned our backs on it. In my little world, it hardly was discussed in my world. I mean, that rape was common in war. I mean, I'm now not ignorant like World War II, or because that's my generation. But no, it the rest of you, I don't think it's hardly been mentioned. So, but you know, especially with Bosnia, well, made every TV station.
Certainly Vietnam, it was certainly right.
Well, I have to say I'm sorry, I was in grad school then, so I'm quite ignorant that way, but
fine.
I'm just confessing my ignorance. Yeah. But it's now we, you know, I would say that now we can't turn our backs on it. We can't say we don't know. We now all know.
Well, for one
yes.
thing,
yes.
that I suggest that it is not seen as a crime to kill people anymore. And if we, I'll take the weed away from that, I've never been in the military. If people who control military would consider teaching the men that raping women was a crime, they might think that it was a crime to kill people.
Okay, yeah.
Well, historically, wasn't it that women were treated more or less as the property of the booty and bounty of the war, and that there was this thing of being able to impregnate the subdued population so that the majority population would have more control in terms of showing off their power? Wasn't it a power issue?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well,
yes.
And that men, you know, wrote the laws or made the laws, and that women, you know, there's in a rape situation, so often it's the women are not valuing their scene. Well, they're attractive, you know, the men don't feel responsible because that power of just being a man, that's part of, you know, they have a right to do that.
Do you think when men rape women in war, they rape the ones who look attractive?
Well, no, but that's for me, a raping, sometimes that's that the victim is blamed as, you know, because she's not valued. You know, sometimes even in a trial, well, I did it because she, you know, she was coming on to me. Or and in war, the whole thing is a violent, violence is promoted, and that's what they're there for, to overtake the enemy. So and women are just lumped into the enemy.
I think many of what you say contribute towards the debate, but I think the underlying thing might be that women were not seen as really something different. It's part of the harm that has been to be done in order to conquer the men of that the land of that particular place. It is the non-disregard of the women as the humans, the disobedience of the creation story of the image of God, because then they did not really reflect that image, because they are part of the loot, they are part of the property, they are part of just what needs to be destroyed. And I think that anyone who believes in the creation story would not be able to not see rape as a crime. Now it is an international crime since 1994, but it has taken also quite a lot of women campaigning for it, because there were still a lot of people that said, well, this is just happens, it's a war situation, the contribution was there, and there's nothing you can do about it. But there is in the wars, from the beginning, intentional rape. And I think when we read the Old Testament stories, we also see that when people conquered, even in the Old Testament stories, they would conquer, they take their women, together with them.
And cattle.
And sheep, and everything.
Property.
And I think this is some of the reading of the Bible that is painfully needs to be read with new eyes, to say against the creation story of the integrity of God, of people as God's, as created in the image of God. These are some of the stories that need to be read. So in education, again, theological education comes back. Really, very important theological education.
That's a tough one. How do you take I'm thinking of cattle, I'm thinking of Maasai,
yes.
Thinking of their wives and their cattle, and I mean, how do you retrain, how do you educate?
In the Christian context, I think the creation story for me makes a very good base. I may then later on be able to build on with the new creation and with baptism, but I think that creation story makes a very good base. And that's why I felt very good this morning that we would have that, and from there build the creation story. Because the creation story brings the integrity of all that God has created, human beings among them, but also the seas and the birds and the insects and everything that God has created. If God is God, then we have to honor that which God has created.
I think especially if we use chapter 2 in creation to elevate women into the fashioning, the beautiful working of God, you can't denigrate women if you realize how much care God invested.
Yeah. Another book that I just thought I would mention to you, African women are, I bring Africa more because I'm from Africa and I need to for this time that I'm here. African women for a long time have been seen as the ones that did not speak up on many issues regarding their lives. And the reason for that has been that much of what gets passed on into the world is usually in written media. At the present time, there are a lot of writings that are coming out of African women. And African women have formed many, theologians specifically, and speaking again from the church, have formed associations to which they can be able to respond back theologically to issues that affect us as women of our continent, but also as women in the global context. I'm a member of one of these associations. It is called the Circle of African Concerned Women Theologians. We inaugurated this circle in 1989 with about 60 women. And now we are nearly 300 women who have been theologically trained, Catholics and Protestants, and women who are in the departments of religious studies and who are Muslims, and women who are from African churches, not African Christian independent churches only, but also women who profess African traditional religions. And we've come together and formed an association, and we are writing from the perspective of the how do we experience God in our lives within the context in which we are set. A first book that we established in 19, we published here in the US, it's published by Orbis. It's called The Will to Arise. There we began to look at culture, how culture and the church and Islam and African traditional religions have actually numbed sometimes our ability to experience God as a people created in God's image. And so there you find a lot of different articles. A new book that we have come up with, again the same group, we
Can
have
you
called it.
The first title again, please? I missed
it. The Will to Arise. It is published by Orbis. A new book that we have just come out with last year, Groaning in Faith, African Women in the Household of God. And in this book, it probably touches some of those things that are often asked from the West, how are Africans dealing with those issues. We deal, for example, with the question of dignity and worth of women in God's kingdom as we see it from Africa. We deal with questions of issues such as female circumcision. This is one of the issues that is often asked about. We deal with issues such as widowhood. Widows in Africa really go through a lot of rights. R-I-T-E-S. I told you all have accents except me and my husband. So let me pronounce it so that you the widows go through a lot of rights. Again, that's an issue that can only be dealt within within gender, because it's women who make other women go through very rigorous rituals for cleansing after the death of a husband. And we have begun to speak about these things from our own perspective as women who are churched or women who are religious, in order for us to be able to make a judgment on culture. Remember, my overall theme is gospel and culture. So that we don't just accept that which is culture, and that is what the church has sometimes done. Sometimes the church has either condemned a culture completely or accepted certain things completely without seeing how they affect different groups of people. And so the women are now speaking and saying, well, some of the things that you have accepted are actually not so good for women. Let's look at them. And this is a very big effort. I think that many of you might also be familiar that there are a number of Asian women that are writing from the Asian theology, from an Asian perspective, and they too are producing quite a number of books. What we find, though, as women from the so-called third world, Africa, Asia, Latin America, etc., is that we have the problem of accessibility of what we write and say to the rest of the world. So we find that the rest of the world remains still judging us on the hearsay of a long time, or sometimes on the theological perspective that has been written either from the perspective of the male theologians that were the pioneer theologians on our continent, African male theologians, or male and female non-indigenous people that have written about us. And so one of the cries that I bring to you as a people gathered this year is look for some of the stuff that is coming out of Africa, out of Asia, out of Latin America, that is indigenous to the people of that continent. and try to see how we are looking at those same issues that have been written over and over again from the point of view of the experiences that we have from within us as we live. In Africa, what we do, actually, we are not telling only our story as individuals, but we are telling our stories as communities. So we work together with the people within our community, and we try to credit the people who tell these stories to us. We try to cross the boundaries that have been put there by the church. For example, in the church, you would find that only the ones that go to church meet together to discuss something. So in a situation where in Africa you have, for example, polygamy, the church would usually say, tell the man who is polygamous, if you want to become a member of the church, choose one of your wives, and you become Christians together with one of your wives. And then the rest for many years, they could not be allowed in the church. Mm-hmm. Part of what we have been doing is to say, but this doesn't, you cannot close God's kingdom, God's reign to anyone. So when we do theology, we try and get everyone inside, including the co-wives, the polygamous people. And now we begin to challenge also the men to be part of this theologizing. I personally am quite convinced that the debate of men and women, the debate on issues of men and women is healthy in mixed groups because we need to talk to each other. I see women's ways of theologizing, be it called feminist, womanist, or women's perspective in theology, as a great gift to the church, a pearl of great price. And when I see the church afraid of the way that women are theologizing, I feel sad in my heart, because I think that it is from that perspective of theologizing that I have seen women that I work with globally in every continent, begin to see and understand what it means to be created in the image of God. And so I hold high hope the theology that is coming out of women's perspectives, by any name that it is called, I hold it quite high. In the most recent book that has just come out, we have tried to do that theology, men and women. Here we call this book, In Search of a Round Table, Gender Theology and Church Leadership. What I did with this book was to get together a group of men and women in a conference together, and then we talked about those issues that we needed to talk about as men and women inside the church and outside the church. We talked about the ordination of women, because there are many churches that still see this as something that should not happen. We talked about the poverty of women. We talked about cultural impact on the welfare of men and women in the society. We talked about how we view each other, attitudes, and all of this. We brought them together in a book, In Search of a Round Table. Again, I see this possibility of men and women theologizing as one of the ways for grounding the creation story. And so I feel that this journey continues. And this is now, just to conclude, how I feel that I'm living my ministry now in the last 8 years. Working first, we began with women alone, but now really expanding that debate so that men may become active involvement. And the big question right now is that, what is theology asking of men? And that's the question that I'd like to leave with you. What is theology asking of men?
Repeat the question.
What is theology asking of men? Yes.
Are you referring to men as male or men as people?
Oh, I'm referring to men as male. What changes could men make in their lives that would help the society to be different? I'm asking it because I've often asked the same question of women. Now I ask it. Okay, I think our time is up. And tomorrow we will begin economic subjects, and you will have a new person to teach, my husband Muhongi Kanyoro. And he will be, tomorrow is
you have all the answers.
Thursday, yes. Tomorrow is Thursday. So there will be a new voice my husband will be doing the lecture, and on Friday we have a day off,
Sabbath.
And on Saturday we have another session. Again, my husband will take that session.
It changed, Ms. Simbi.
Yeah?
You haven't gotten the change yet. He's on both Thursday and Friday.
Oh, and not Saturday?
Not Saturday.
Okay.
Sabbath.
Okay, so our Sabbath will be Saturday.
Yes,
it will. Okay. Okay. Thank you. So we hope to see you, some of you, or all of you tomorrow.